Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between food production and food consumption. Susan Bradford joining us, investigative journalist for yet another week of unveiling things that previously we didn't know were happening. How's Susan?
Hi, I'm doing very well. Trent, how are you this morning?
Well, I have three pig sheds that are no longer upright, and as they were supposed to be, a little microburst came through at 3:30 in the morning on Tuesday morning with some tornado activity. I didn't say that was a tornado, but, you know, we're kind of we're picking up. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'm perfect.
Oh, well, that's good. I heard that... We've had a few wind spells over here too, and I was looking through the news to see where these were coming from, and apparently we're going to have a big bout of tornadoes beginning in June. So I thought we were done, but I guess we have more to look forward to.
I think all storm activity on the East Coast centers around Washington, D.C.
Yes, it does.
Oh, wait, that's a different kind of storm. So did you want to talk about cloud seeding and 5 years worth of rain in Dubai today, or what's on your mind?
Well, we could do that if you like. I wanted to shed some light on the Civil War and how the, I would call them the criminal elites, had weaponized a slavery against the United States and kind of set up this kind of infrastructure that they use to kind of loot our populations by way of the slave trade and also the activities surrounding the Civil War.
So I think anything I can learn about the Civil War, I'm all game. But Susan, in the past, I'm going to say 2 years, because of the events that are unfolding, and you have contributed to this greatly. You know, I was brought up learning history and learning about World War I, World War II, Korean War, Vietnam War, Civil War, all these things as a means of preserving liberty.
Correct.
The truth of the matter is, they're not at all about preserving liberty as we are taught. It's about preserving liberty from not who we're fighting, but from who pitted us against one another.
That's correct. And it was these were various strategies to steal the assets of nations, reorganize governments under the control of criminals, and I think actually to erode liberty around the world. I mean, they wanted to have all the power and wealth within their own hands. And it saddens me to think of all the lives of innocent, noble people who are lost in these wars.
Isn't tomorrow the shot, the history of 1775 on April 19th, the shot at Concord that led to the Revolutionary War? Wasn't that tomorrow?
I don't know off the top of my head. It may very well be.
Are you kidding me? It only took me 3.5 months to find something you didn't know off the top of your head. That was a compliment, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I should know. You think that's a very important date in history. I should know that. Going back to this kind of crime syndicate and the slavery, the United States has been
hold on.
Under
I'm going to interrupt you before we do this, just to verify I was right. On the morning of April 19th, 1775, colonial militia from Concord surrounding the towns engaged in gunfire with the British regulators, leading to the Revolutionary War.
And that's a very important date. That was a date that we took our interests within our own hands, our power within our own hands, and rejected this tyranny coming from England.
Are you telling me the Revolutionary War wasn't two kingpins of financial wealth pitting us against one another?
It was in part. Originally, England and the British monarchy, I mean, England and the colonies had a mutually advantageous relationship. We supplied foodstuffs and so forth. They in turn provided financing, governmental structures, and any disputes could have been resolved through diplomatic channels. And we were kind of partners, but the Rothschilds were then beginning to insinuate themselves into the, I guess, the financial networks within England and the colonies. Originally, the colonies printed their own money. They had enough for commerce, for trade. And then the Rothschilds took issue with this, and they said, you can't print your own money. So they caused Parliament to pass an act that forbade the colonies to print their own money. Instead, they'd have to take out loans through the Bank of England. And by taking out loans, they were therefore in debt to the Rothschilds. They can control the money supply. And of course, what followed was a lot of unemployment and debt and financial issues. So that was the issue with the banks was one of the causes for the American Revolution. But at the same time, the Rothschilds have systematically pitted colonies and empires against each other through wars. Like they've kind of finagled behind the scenes. And what happens is that, of course, both countries go into debt, both the empire and the colony go into debt. The Rothschilds hold that debt. They destabilize each, and then they take over. So you're right. It was like we were being pitted against each other, and America should have been working with England for both sides to be strengthening each other. But Rothschild kind of eroded that.
So what I heard you say very loudly was that there was a problem in the United States. First of all, we were told we couldn't print our own money. We weren't the United States, the colonies. Told we couldn't print our own money, leading to a high rate of unemployment, leading to major debt, and ultimately a financial collapse. I'm sure glad that's not happening today.
What is it they say, that those who don't remember history are doomed to repeat it?
I think we study history so that we do it right the second time again. Yeah. All right. Civil War.
All right. Civil War. So, I think one of the reasons that they have rewritten history is to cover up all of the shenanigans that they've been pulling over these years.
I agree 100%.
Kind of sad. So the Civil War. So just to kind of set the stage a little bit, one of the joint stock companies that was chartered by the British monarchy, starting with Queen Elizabeth, was the East India Company. The East India Company was originally established for the merchants of London who were Jewish, and they were. It was really done to expand their markets, but eventually the Venetians, Venetian merchants, and others who were connected to the Vatican, infiltrated the East India Company, and in turn they began to kind of transform this into an agency for imperialistic conquest. So they began trafficking in slaves, humans, drug running, arms trafficking, because they use war to eliminate their rivals. In turn, they would establish their new markets, and then they would use drugs to weaken people, to weaken their minds, their resolve, and by eliminating populations, sometimes through chemical warfare, they were able then to supply, the slaves that they had acquired by conquering territories and sell those people as cheap labor to, to compensate for the merchants and others who needed labor, they could then, provide them with that cheap labor. So the East India Company brought slaves to the United States. And for one of the principal uses for them was the cotton trade, to pick cotton. And this was due to the fact that Britain was growing to have one of the greatest textile industries in Europe and in the world. So the slaves would pick cotton. The cotton would then be transported over to, I think, Liverpool or Manchester, some of these other industrial cities. England would then sell the completed textiles to markets, for example, in India, thereby destroying India's own textile trade in order to pay for the textiles that India could not itself produce because they had the British Raj that prevented them from doing so. They would then have to sell opium to the Chinese, thereby weakening China for conquest, and they would take those proceeds from that opium to buy the textile. So essentially, Britain had an entire industry based upon the cotton trade. So the cotton trade was integral into this kind of growing international crime syndicate. So you're looking at the Rothschild financial and commercial interests that were behind this. So we know that, you
Susan,
know,
we're going to
go
pick it
ahead.
up with the Rothschilds' personal or financial interest behind this when we continue with the second leg of the journey. Roll route, Susan Bradford, more history, Civil War style, and East India Company after this. So to power you so that we can continue to talk about this Civil War debacle and the financiers behind it, beef is the best option. Beef is always best. Take grass, put a ruminant animal in the middle, Piedmontese breed, you end up with the most tender beef on the planet. You, the consumer, reap the rewards. You don't need to go to the store. We deliver the tender beef to your door. CPBeef.com. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Lewis, alongside Susan Bradford, investigative journalist. And I want to take you back to where you were. But just before we went to the break, you said that England ultimately was selling opium into China to basically cripple and keep the country weak for
yes,
exactly what's happening today with fentanyl from China into the United States.
That is correct. They have used opium and drugs repeatedly. Even the Chinese were even begging Queen Victoria, who was a Rothschild, like, why, you know, please stop poisoning our people. The chairman Mao, who was also a Rothschild bloodline, used opium and drugs to weaken his own people during the Communist Revolution. And even today, we have drugs being weaponized against the American populations, not only to raise money for this crime syndicate, but also to weaken us so we can, you know, increasingly become weak for conquest at their hands.
Okay, back to where I interrupted you when you're talking about the Rothschilds' financial gain at this point in time.
Okay, so we know that the original, our founders, were rejecting their efforts to establish a central bank. I mean, first they tried to, you know, to have us take loans from the Bank of England. With the founding of the country, there were early efforts from the Rothschild banking cartel to establish a central bank. That was when, you know, these interests were not began, you know, were weakened. They then caused the War of 1812 to happen, resulting in us, America, needing to take out a loan. So we have another, you know, the rise of another central bank. And then in the 1830s, we have Andrew Jackson, President Andrew Jackson, who not only refused to recharter the second bank of the United States, which was a central bank owned by Rothschild, but he actually paid off the national debt. And so ironically, you know, the year that he paid off the national debt, there was an attempt made against his life, an assassination attempt. So he was helping to separate us from this criminal banking cartel. And around this time, Nathan Rothschild and his brother-in-law, Moses Montefiore, began to take to challenge slavery. They suddenly, slavery that they had used was no longer moral, and the reason for this is that the British had a competing cotton industry in Egypt that was struggling to compete against the American cotton plantation owners. And so the scheme that they used, they set in motion, was that they were going to eliminate slavery, and in turn, Britain was going to compensate not the slaves, but the slave owners for the loss of their chattel. So you're looking at some 15 million pounds from that the Rothschilds were going to loan to the British government at an interest rate preferable to themselves. And they were then going to place the British government further into debt to finance this. And I think according to some accounts in The Guardian and other newspapers, the amount of money that they were required to pay was 40% of the national GDP.
Oof.
Can you imagine this?
Oh, my goodness.
So this went into into the hands of the slave owners. So there was a great movement to end slavery in the United States that was created by the Rothschild Crime Syndicate. Around the same time, they're also kind of trying to install their secret societies into the United States. This was done by way of the Scottish Freemasons. And the face that this took within the United States was the Order of Zion, the B'nai B'rith, and there were a few others, but these were the organizations that were working behind the scenes to kind of advance Rothschild's commercial interests. And I see you look like you're about to ask something,
Well,
and I may be in,
I just
or I can
marvel at
continue.
every time we turn somewhere, I find the Scottish Freemasons behind the evil that we are dealing with in the world. I just can't believe that every single turn, these two entities show, well, it's ultimately the Rothschilds, but this is the path to get there.
We're really looking at like a singular family and their allies and relatives who are behind all of the troubles that we're facing, all the subversions, the wars, the revolution, the debt, the chaos, and drug trafficking, the human trafficking, arms trafficking, governmental corruption. It's all them. And if we can address the problems that they created and challenge their lack of legitimacy, I think we have a good chance of ending wars for good and really having a very stable and prosperous future for all of us.
Whatever it takes to get there, I'm all in. Let's do it.
Sounds good. So the amount of money that Britain was required to pay out was worth, I think, in like really, it was worth at the time, which would have been in today's money, over 300 billion pounds. And they continue to pay out to these southern landholders well up until 2015. There were over 11,000 accounts that they were paying into. They're talking about generational wealth for ending the slave trade. And over 46,000 individuals were on the receiving end of this, many of which had ties to the British monarchy, which would have been Rothschild's extended sphere of influence. Members of the financial political elite who were milking the slave trade generations later at the cost of the British American taxpayer or the British taxpayer. So it was pretty outrageous. So as part of this agenda, they had promised that they would provide land for the slaves. The free, newly free slaves with the end of the Cold War or the end of the Civil War. So President Lincoln was on board with this, but somehow he was assassinated, and so the agenda didn't quite take force. And it was shown that before the assassination, John Wilkes Booth, the trigger man, met with a gentleman who was, I think it was Frank Wolfe, who was, I hope I have the first name correct, who was a member of the Order of Zion, and the or who had met with him right before the assassination. And the orders to kill Lincoln were reportedly given by a man by the name of Judea Benjamin, who was a leader of the Order of Zion. So you're looking at the public face of Rothschild that assassinated one of our leaders. It was Simon Wolfe, not Frank Wolfe, was Simon Wolfe, who met with John Wilkes Booth, who had given the orders to assassinate our president. And after the war, of course, the not only were the blacks or the African Americans slaves not given their land, but they were reduced to having to be indentured servants for these cotton plantation owners, who with fewer protections, while the slave owners were being entirely bankrolled and given really boatloads of money from the British government at the expense of the taxpayers.
So there's so many interesting things in that. I mean, the one component, despite the slave owners being given loads of money, the resources of the entire South, what was the Confederate territory, were decimated. And
they,
then
they
that,
were destiny.
and that did not allow them to feed them, provide for themselves going forward. And that's where the cattle drive era came in, which is my favorite period of history, U.S. history. But the other thing that I wanted to dive into, and we don't really have time, is Abraham Lincoln is such an interesting study when you look at the American presidents, because you can make an argument, and you have, that all American presidents come from a bloodline and have been selected instead of elected. I don't think, even though the ES and S machines weren't used, the selection process was in place. Lincoln is a complete outlier in that scenario.
There are reports, and I'm not an attorney, so I'll just speak generally about this. But there are reports that he was not a legitimate president because he was an attorney, and the attorneys reported to the Crown Bar in England, which is controlled by England. Therefore, anybody who holds there's like a titles of nobility act, and so therefore anybody who serves a foreign interest, and which he would have done as a member of the bar, that he could not have held office. And so there are reports, and again I'm not an expert on this. You can look into this independently, that the original Federation of States was not the group of states that elected President Lincoln, that a new corporation was established by the Rothschilds, and that Lincoln was elected president of that corporation. So he was actually serving Rothschild interest as president.
That's interesting. And we'll pick it up in the second half of Roll Route with the, what is it, the British Attorney Registry? Is that what the bar stands for?
I believe so.
We'll be back with more Susan Bradford Civil War history after this. Don't forget, when it comes to innovation, reliability, and pest control in your fields, Apache sprayers get it done. And nobody outservices Simpson Farm Enterprises. On the web, simpsonfarm.com. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Lewis alongside Susan Bradford. And I misspoke just before we went to the break. I looked it up during the break. Bar, British Accountability Registry. No, I just did it wrong again. Accreditation Registry. Good grief. I can't even fact check myself. So, and now we're in a serious rabbit trail, but because we're here, let's just explore this a minute.
Okay.
I learned that, and this is just in recent years, I didn't learn this in U.S. history, trust me, Susan, and nor did you, that because of the Civil War, we as a country, the United States, became completely broke.
Correct.
That's why Nevada became a state long before the stretch of states in between the Mississippi River and Nevada, because Nevada had all the silver and they had the resources, and they went out and latched onto Nevada to fund the war. The war ends, the United States is broke, so the representative republic is dissolved, and the corporation then put into play, controlled by the British crown, so to speak, or well, not the crown, the Rothschilds. You're telling me that happened before the Civil War.
What happened before the Civil War?
That the United States became a corporation.
Yeah, I hope I don't have all the details. I hope I have them all correct. I believe that you may want to double check this, but that there was a separate corporation that was created so that Lincoln could declare war. And I believe that the war was really a mercenary war, that he never received a quorum or the support, the approval from Congress to do so. So it wasn't even a legitimate war. And so they needed to, in order to do what they wanted to do, they had to set up an independent corporation that appeared to be hold the, you know, the under being done under the auspices of the United States, but was separate. And that the Civil War, which was fought under the pretext of freeing the slaves, purpose of enslaving the American citizen into under debt, like perpetual debt.
Right.
But there, I know there are some details I don't know about this.
So back to the original question, you're also of the belief, because Lincoln was an attorney, in practice, I mean, I grew up in Illinois, so I got indoctrinated with Lincoln at every level. Been to the house he grew up in. I did all these things, you know, in New Salem. He was born and grew up in New Salem, very poor. No, actually, he was born in Kentucky, and then his family moved to Central Illinois. But we are taught that he was self-made and he was Honest Abe and all these other things, which I don't dispute. But he doesn't come from those bloodlines that we normally think about and talk about as presidential material. But you're saying because he was an attorney and was part of the British accreditation registry that he was kind of hand-selected to be the one to bring about the division.
I think he was hand-selected. He was also, I believe, advised by this criminal network that ultimately controlled the South. So the, wow. The South, was ultimately controlled by like the Order of Zion, the Scottish Freemasonry, and they were the ones who kind of orchestrated the secession movement. And so they cut a deal with Lincoln to free the slaves. That was, you know, the reason for which the war was fought. Then the British plantation owners or in America, their extended networks were compensated for that. And the promised land and opportunities that the slaves were going to get with their freedom were then swept away. So he served their purposes, and then they eliminated him.
I see that clearly. But what I'm trying to figure out, because as I mentioned, like everybody else, particularly born in the land of Lincoln, we're taught that he was just this great orator, which obviously he was, but. That he was trying to save the Union. And then as I became an adult and maybe too many friends in Texas who absolutely despise Lincoln, and that whole despising comes about not because of freeing the slaves. I don't think anybody argues that that was a bad thing. There may be some, but that's minor. It's minor the number of people that would argue that having slaves was a good idea for our future. But it's the states' rights issue that has got me completely relooking at what Lincoln's premise was, what his plan was, and what ultimately we needed to accomplish as a free United States of America is that we are not one country. We are 50 individual states working together as a representative republic. And that was fractured during the Civil War. I don't care who you are. You can't argue that.
That's very true. We were a federation of states. And so he created like a new union. It was like a new union. That then had, I think it was called the Lieber Law, took precedence over state law. Like they were creating like a new level of law that was supreme over the Union. And I think that in turn began to erode states' rights. And I also remember that the Russian rulers at the time, they prevented the breakup of the Union. And I don't know if that was done for our purposes or not, given that the Rothschilds were then kind of insinuating themselves into Russia. But I believe that the Russians had threatened to send in their own military to challenge any efforts from Britain to break up the Union, like to separate it into the North and the South. So I think there may be some other strategic imperatives behind that.
There's just so many things go on behind the scenes that nobody has any idea about, Susan.
That's true. You're right. No, that's very true.
All right. So now that I've distracted you, where do we go from here? Because we figured out now we've at least got to a president who is who he is, but we don't know who he really was and what his real mission was, who was calling his shots. Where do we go?
There's one thing I read a few wars on the Civil War recently, including Gone with the Wind, written by Margaret Mitchell. An incredible book, if anyone has a chance to read it. But one thing that struck me is that at the end of the Civil War, some of these African slaves were directed to kill the Southern plantation owners and steal their land. Like they were told, look, this is all yours now. They enslaved you, go after them and take their property. And to me, that reminded me of the Bolshevik Revolution. Like they're using the same tactics. Like they're weaponizing people who are dispossessed, who feel that they're not privileged. And they're directed to go after these, those who appear to have the privilege. And I was wondering if that wasn't being done to eliminate the competition to the other plantation owners who were aligned with this crime syndicate. Like, they were weaponizing the African Americans against them.
Weaponizing people. No doubt that hasn't changed. Susan Bradford, we got one segment left. Roll right after this. So, Susan, I appreciate this, and we are going to go to a break. But, folks, I just had to pull away a little early in this segment and share some statistics. I mean, we all know how absolutely horrendous war is. But in the Civil War, where you have families fighting families, some cases siblings fighting siblings, to think that all of this is because a few wealthy people in the world are greedy, I got to be honest, it just gets harder for me to stomach every single day. Let me just share with you some statistics that are from the Library of Congress. More than 3 million men fought in the Civil War. 2% of the United States population at the time, more than 620,000 died in the Civil War. In 2 days at Shiloh, on the banks of the Tennessee River, more Americans fell than in all previous Americans combined, American wars. During the Battle of Antietam, 12,401 Union men were killed, missing, or wounded, double the casualties of D-Day 82 years later. And with the total of 23,000 casualties on both sides, it was the bloodiest single day of the Civil War. At Cold Harbor, Virginia, 7,000 Americans fell in 20 minutes. Disease was the chief killer during the war, taking two lives for everyone that died with battle wounds. During the Battle of Antietam, Claire Barton tended to the wounded so close to the fighting that a bullet actually went through her sleeve and killed the man she was treating. Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., future Chief Justice, was wounded three times during the Civil War, in the chest at Ball's Bluff, in the back at Antietam, and in the heel at Chancellorsville. And on May 13, 1865, a month after Robert E. Lee surrendered at Appomattox, Private John J. Williams of the 35th Indiana became the last man killed in the Civil War on the Battle of Palmito Ranch in Texas. The final skirmish was a victory for the Confederates 1 month after the surrender had taken place. I hope you share my angst with what is continuing to happen today that puts our young men and women in peril's way. It's Roll Route. We'll take a break. We'll be back and continue this conversation. Susan Bradford didn't go anywhere. She's right here. We'll have more after this. Well, in today's world, many people are talking about nitric oxide as a part of healthy living, but Dr. Nathan Bryan steps in here because how do we know the difference between one nitric oxide supplement and another one, Nathan?
Well, there's several things you look for. Is the people that are formulated or backing that product ever published a paper in the nitric oxide literature? Do they know anything about the basic enzymology and biochemistry of nitric oxide? Because here's what people do. Put a lot of ingredients in a bag or in a capsule and call it nitric oxide. You have to understand how the human body makes nitric oxide. You got to understand what goes wrong in people that can't make it. And then you got to provide product technology that actually fixes the reason you can't make nitric oxide. If you're low in testosterone, you don't give precursors or things because you've lost the ability to produce testosterone. What do? You actually give the actual molecules. Same thing with women with hormone replacement.
Full details and order the product at no2u.com. That's N-O, number two, letter U.com. Put Trent as your coupon code and I pay the shipping. Wait a minute, that's not good. Another part of that healthy living is your diet. Certified Piedmontese can be a part of that scenario. The best part of this story, you don't need to go to the store. We deliver the tender beef to your door. Well, there's two things. It's the most tender beef you'll ever consume. It is produced by the cattlemen of the Great Plains of America. And quite honestly, if you go to the website, there's more than just beef there. I call it the protein plethora. Get more details about how you can improve your overall health and well-being, not only with nitric oxide, but beef. CPBeef.com. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce, alongside Susan Bradford. We are exploring and diving into the Civil War in areas that most people don't talk about. So weaponizing former slaves to pit one slave owner, or one plantation owner, because there should no longer be slave owners, they're plantation owners at this point. And so dating back to 18, long before that, obviously, but in the United States, utilizing race to weaponize people against one another.
Correct. And communism is essentially a Rothschild construct and strategy to essentially separate people from their assets so that these criminal elites can claim the assets and powers of the nation for themselves. And the communists have always argued that if they could exploit race in the United States, they could divide our country. So they have been behind, you know, pitting the blacks against the whites, you know, Chinese and different races against each other as part of a divide and conquer strategy. And the KKK, which has been blamed on white people, you know, as evidence that we're racist. The KKK was an extension of these same crime syndicates. So after they had promised to free the slaves, they then reneged, or not, they promised to free the slaves and promised them land. They reneged on that promise. And then they had the KKK, which then terrorized the slaves. And those activities were then blamed on the wider white America that had nothing to do with it and wouldn't have approved of it. Because I know, I'm sure, you know, our last week, you know, you had said that you're a member of the United Church of Christ. Mm-hmm. I know that within my church, we always welcome, you know, our black brothers. They were our sisters and brothers in Christ. That was the Church of the Pilgrims. And, you know, from the Christian perspective, all people are equal in the eyes of God, regardless of whether you're black, white, you know, slavery right. is frowned upon in Christianity traditionally. So this was really not of our doing, but this was something that was weaponized against the American people, the institution of slavery that was created and perpetuated by the crime syndicate.
You mentioned it without using the terminology. People are familiar with the terminology, but I'm not sure they know what it means. Because it's even come up again today, and that is 40 acres and a mule. It was Abraham Lincoln who gifted freed slaves each of 40 acres and a mule. But within, mm-hmm. I think it was within 2 years, Andrew Johnson rescinded that and took it away.
That's correct. And I believe that he was, who knows, I guess it's speculation on my part, but maybe he was assassinated for the very reason that the criminal elites had no intention of giving them any land. They wanted that land for themselves.
Yeah, I can see that clearly too.
That'd be like a thought anyway. But it was very interesting that in 2015, when the Rothschilds had lost their 200-year contractual control of the British monarchy, that was the year that Black Lives Matter was created. And of course, we saw what happened during the Trump administration, that the banks, which are ultimately controlled by the Rothschilds, were bankrolling Black Lives Matter, which went around to different communities, demanding that whites surrender their privilege, give up their houses and so forth for African Americans over the crime of slavery. And so I think that was a time that they were kind of weaponizing their own abuses against the slaves, against, you know, to the American people. And a lot of these Black Lives Matter leaders were exposed later to have been Marxist. You know, they were using the assets to buy houses and other, you know, really incredible estates And that they had done very little to actually improve the situation for the Black people. They were just using, again, exploiting racism, the politics of race, to tear the country apart.
So off the beaten path a little bit, but yet the same premise. And I thought that Black Lives Matter followed what they saw happen in South Africa, because I personally, Susan, have 12 friends who left South Africa and their farms because mainly because their wife said, "I'm tired of sleeping with a gun. We're leaving." And the latest number is just short of 5,000 white farmers have been killed in their own homes. And when they were
Yes,
killed, it was the best thing that happened to them, because they were brutally tortured and unhumane things that you can't even talk about happened before the death itself. But that occurred dating back to the late 80s. How does that tie into this whole thing? Because it certainly looks like the script, so to speak, on what Black Lives Matter was supposed to be following.
that's a good question. I remember during the 80s, that Soros, through George Soros, through a group called the National Endowment for Democracy, and the Republicans, who were the warriors of the right, supposedly fighting for freedom, were working in Africa during that period to kind of overthrow the governments and then to install these kind of puppet regimes. And I know that Africa now is being targeted for as part of this Belt and Road Initiative from China. Again, China is controlled by the Rothschilds. So my thought would be that maybe they are there was an effort to kind of eliminate the white landowners so that this other shadow group could take those assets, and that they were using the excuse of race and white supremacy in order to do that.
I think that's exactly right. And their puppet in that particular situation clearly was Nelson Mandela, because it was when
Yes.
he got out and the apartheid that all of this started, and he instilled that hatred.
And he was their man. I think he was, wasn't he also an avowed communist, if I'm not mistaken?
Absolutely. It all comes back to that premise of communism, period. But what's most amazing is that they have the ability to weaponize. Let's just use the slaves of the South post-Civil War. They use the slaves as a weapon against the plantation owners. But quite frankly, they maybe were white or they were black. It didn't matter. And they are trying to recreate the same slave system that they just freed them, got out of themselves.
That's true. And you think of all of these people being trafficked across the border now. Many of them are accompanying drug lords and so forth. So you're looking at the same crime syndicate, and these people are coming in. They're indentured servants. They're indebted to the coyotes, and they're being used as cheap labor and slaves. So it's like the same slave system. And even now, many people are being forced to accept very low salaries. To toil for these corporations. So that's like a new form of slavery, that they're not being paid their worth. It's all just the
I don't know
profits.
if you heard about this, but California has a new fast food minimum wage as of, I think it was April 1st, $20 an hour. And I had someone this last week from California confirm that they're now replacing what were previous people working with AI and using order takers in India. So you
I
could
heard
drive
that.
through a fast food restaurant in California, order your food on that screen right there, and somebody in India who's maybe getting 2 cents an hour is working for the company taking your order.
Wow. And imagine that India is part of the British Raj. And so we can see with what you've just stated that these new developments are promoted with the greatest of rhetoric. You want to give, your workers a good living wage. And of course, that living wage is not necessarily sustainable. And so that then gives the companies an excuse to then offshore their order taking to India or to AI or to give it to AI.
You just said something I want you to expand upon. India is an extension of the British what?
Raj, it's one of their territories. It was under their, I guess, control, you could say. So it has been for centuries.
So because I do my Across the Pond live with Andrew Henderson from the UK every morning, I have now been told and educated that in the UK and Ireland, because Northern Ireland is part of the UK, Ireland is not, but Boris Johnson steps down as the Prime Minister of England, the UK, and Rishi Sunak, I think, of Indian descent, takes over, just assumes the position. In Scotland, the lady steps down under some corruption cloud, and a gentleman of Indian descent takes over. In Ireland, we had the same exact scenario play out where a gentleman of Indian descent takes over. And I was focused on this because we had our own little wonder boy in the United States running for president in the Republican primary, Vivek Ramaswamy, who was of Indian descent. And it was like, there's a little too many coincidences going on here. What's really happening?
That's a good question. My guess could be, you know, that since the Rothschilds have a habit of, they don't work with countries, they work through them. So my guess could be that they are using their influence through India to kind of project their power through these countries by way of these Indian representatives. And I remember that one of the politicians, I can't remember which one in Scotland, as soon as he was elected, he began to attack white privilege. Like, it's incredible that this is a, look at the white privilege within Scotland. Like, how dare a Scottish government be populated by Scots and not minorities? Well, Scotland was for many years, almost entirely white. So I remember that as soon as he got into power, he began attacking white privilege. And this whole white privilege agenda is a Rothschild construct. So I would think that Rothschild is probably behind this. And Vivek, I believe, he worked for Soros. He was a Soros fellow or some such thing. And Soros, of course, is an asset of Rothschild and partner.
Well, I don't think it's any. Oh, and by the way, one addition to that, Scotland just enacted here in April a new restriction on free speech. If you say something that offends someone, you are subject to arrest. But the bigger picture here, Susan Bradford, is that we started talking about corruption involving the East India companies. Mm-hmm. And ironically, we closed the program by accident talking about what's going on in India. Always enlightening. Thank you, Susan.
Thank you so much, Trent.
Quickly, the books. Where do we find your books and all of this information?
Thank you. I've written a number of books in the deep state, which you can find through my website, susanbradford.org. And I also have a Substack where I'm providing a lot of new revelations and new information about these characters who have taken over our government. And you can hopefully sign up to my Substack. I'd love to have you join me, and we can kind of spread the word and become empowered through education.
We've journeyed down that path, connecting food producers to food consumers. For Susan Bradford, I'm Trent Lewis, both of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a rural route. And before you go, don't forget to check out the music, the lyrics, the sounds, the ultimate heart and soul of this nation through Christian and country roots, keeping our nation in boots. It's Greg Hager and his songs. GregHager.com for full details. Order an album today.